All right, so this is Bio 231, the first session, and it's Monday, August 17th, and we're going to cover the introductory material plus a lot of other kinds of material. In class, we just went over the study plan, your weekly study plan, how to get into the class. All right, so have you guys registered for the class already? Yeah? Some of you have registered? I tell you what, try to find a seat. And if you're not registered and you sign the sign-in sheet, please allow a student that is registered to sit down. There is a very strict college policy that says only officially registered students can be in class. Because, well, you know what? When you come to college, all right, and you think you're paying tuition to have access to the buildings and a teacher, you think you're paying the teachers and administration in the building, guess who else you're paying? You're paying a bunch of lawyers so that you can be here. Okay? So, as a matter of fact, every time you go buy an aspirin, you think you're paying a pharmaceutical company, right, for that aspirin. Who else are you paying? A bunch of lawyers. Okay, you might want to move out of medicine and go into law. But anyway, because of liability, we can only allow officially registered students in class. Okay? So that's really important because I don't want to be held liable. Okay, so is anybody else registered here? Yeah? Yeah, just one sign-in sheet. It's a yellow sheet with staples on it, and eventually it will kind of filter down. So yeah, just, yeah?
What if you already went to the lab this morning at 7:30
yeah.
And you got an add-on?
Yeah.
So I
haven't registered yet. Oh, no, if you're in the class with an add code, you're going to be in the class, but you officially have to register first. Okay, but you please stay in the class. Yeah. And don't forget, if you got an add code, you automatically won't be registered. You still have to go through the process yourself. And be careful. Make sure all those fees are paid, et cetera, parking fines or whatever, because Webster's brutal. It will drop you from the class immediately. All right, so make sure all those things are taken care of. Okay, so Blackboard, you'll find, is a really nice resource for yourself. So let's, you should go home tonight, make sure you can log into Blackboard. And I'll show you how to do that right now. Next time, if you can't, then I'll help you. But today, I won't be able to, wow, that screen's way up there. We got a better screen. Okay. But I don't, there it is. All right, so you saw the URL, and then here has got to be your student number. Your student number begins with a funny symbol, which is what? That ampersand? That's got to be in there, otherwise Blackboard won't know who you are. Then your number. I don't know why I'm getting asterisks. Oh, because NumLock is probably on. Well, there's another problem, too. Okay, and then your password that you use for WebStar, works 51% of the time. 49% of the time, who knows what's in there, and then I have to reset it for you. Okay, but try the one that's in WebStar. Okay, and then you can hit return. I just click login so it doesn't get messed up. All right, so on the right-hand frame is going to be the classes that have Blackboard content for you. And you might have one, or you might have maybe as many as I have this semester. I'm not sure. All right, let's see. 12660, that's a real class. All right, so here is your virtual classroom for this class. And here's a nice exam figure that you're going to have to know about. Course information button. All right, there's a welcome letter that I sent out. Here's the syllabus. Here's your weekly study plan. Here is a copy of the lab manual that you'll get a copy of in lab today. But if you lose it, you can also always download another copy right here for yourself. All right, then here are a bunch of different kinds of plugins for playing audio files, video files, for looking at PowerPoints or Word documents. If you don't have a program, you can get a free download to at least view and maybe print this material out right here. All right, so course documents right here. I have the lecture slide. So what I passed out is for chapter one. So next time, go here, print out for chapter two, which we might get to next time on Wednesday. So if you'd like just to make some sparse notes on the text files that I'm going to show you today, then this is really handy for yourself. All right, so these are all the different lectures that we're going to have in the class. Exam study guides. I'm going to bring these to class next time, but these will, you should focus your attention exclusively on these exam study guides for the lecture exams. So it tells you what chapters you have to read, probably what pages, what the objectives are in that material, and then also you have pictures in your textbook. Of course, since this is anatomy, the pictures are of anatomy, and you should be able to label all of those different illustrations. So I've taken all of the illustrations that I could possibly photocopy, put on the test, erased the labels off of them, and you can practice labeling. And usually about 40% of every test are illustrations that you have to label. And if you practice labeling these illustrations 10 times, you should be able to get 100% on that part of the test. All right, so that just really helps you out. All right, so here are, because we're going to have five exams in the class. All right, then assignments. This is what really helps. All right, and these are for, not for credit, but these are what we call, I call pre-lecture homework assignments. Before I give a lecture, since there's going to be new terminology to you in the lecture, if you just come to lecture and listen to it, a lot of that material is going to go right over your head because you've never heard of these terms before. So I want you to download the pre-lecture reading assignment, become familiar with that terminology, and answer a few nice, simple questions so that when I give a lecture, it will make some sense to you. And then it also helps you focus on maybe asking some important questions during the class. All right, if you run into some homework that isn't making sense, I can help you answer that during the lecture. All right, and then at various, so you can get all of these homework assignments today, and then the answer keys will automatically pop up later on during the semester under this file right here, and it says that it's empty, but it's not really empty. These things are just timed to open up after the assignment is due. But try to stay current with that. And when you come into class, if you want to show me your pre-lecture reading assignment, say, oh, yeah, look at this. You know, I'd be really happy to look it over. Okay? So that is important. Now, if you do the pre-lecture reading assignment the night before the test, that might help you, but that's not what it's designed to do. These are really nice, simple questions, and if you're struggling to do the pre-lecture reading assignment the night before a test, you probably really missed the ball. These things are designed before the lecture, not before the test. All right, the study, what's important before that you accomplish before the test? It is the study guide. That's the study guide, not the pre-lecture reading material. All right, so course information. So if you want this file, for instance, how about syllabus? Here's a syllabus right here. How would you get that syllabus? I've got the cursor. Notice what happened to the cursor. It changed from an arrow to a little pointy hand. All right. You can just click on it, and usually you click with the left-hand mouse button, and that will open it up as a Microsoft Word document. But maybe you want to download it to your computer so that you don't have to go to the internet every time that you want it. What can you do? You can do, click the right-hand mouse button, the one you don't usually click. All right. You guys know more about computers than me. All right, and then it comes up with this window, and it says different computers, even in Windows, say different things. It's going to say save link as, save target as, save something as. All right, so let's select save target as. All right, and it's downloading it. And then you can put it on your computer someplace. Create a 231 folder. Like, this looks good right here. Let's put it right here. Syllabus, I'll be able to find it. Then say save, boom, downloaded. And then what? Doesn't automatically open. All right, so let's go find it. What does it look like? Right here? Yeah, that's it. Okay, so here is our syllabus. So this is what I want to talk about. Hopefully you see your CRN someplace on here. You got to memorize your CRN. Because if you ever send me an email, make sure your name is in there, the course name, and the CRN number. Because as you see, I'm teaching 14 different classes this semester. I'll have no clue where you are. Right? So I got to have that information so I can find you in the computer. All right, so this is me. That's my email address. That's my voicemail. That's in my office, but as you can imagine, I'm never in my office, so you can just leave a voicemail and I'll get back to you. And then here is the URL for my personal website at Cypress College, and this is where I put the recordings at, right in here. So you go to this site, then click 231, and then you'll see your lectures. You have to click on that, and then you can download the lectures. An hour and a half lecture is about 15 megabytes, so you have to use a reasonably fast connection in order to download them in a reasonable period of time, even though it's just an audio file. See my office hours, you got the text information. All right, here's the link for Blackboard. That's where we're working off of right now. So here is a link that's in, you have a hard copy on your syllabus. But if you save the Word document, right, if I hit Control, right, then that becomes an executable link. It's just not text, right? So you can use this Word document to link to Blackboard when you want to log on. All right, so I'm not going to read any of this kind of, all this stuff to you. Email etiquette, make sure I get that CRN number so I know who and where you are. Make sure that you come to class, right, and read all of this stuff right here. Grading. Your grade is going to be made up of lab quizzes, lab practicums, and objective exams. So three things. Attendance won't be taken, but you have to be in class in order to take the exams. Right, so it sort of counts as material. 100 points for lab quizzes. You might have 16 quizzes during the semester, and whatever your average and a percentage of all those quizzes, that will be then given to you as points. Right, so if you get 80% on 17 quizzes, you get what? 80 points for that part of the lab, for that part of the course grade. If you get 50% on those quizzes, then you get 50 points. If you get 100%, then you get 100 points. All right, so every instructor has different number of quizzes during the semester. As a matter of fact, depending on your instructor, you might have two quizzes a lab period. All right, if everybody's leaving early, for instance, then an instructor might say, okay, well, let's just have a nice easy quiz at the end of lab. And then if you leave early, right, then you get gypped out of those points. Practicums, five practicums at 50 points each, and then five objective exams. And every objective exam is going to be 210 points because the lecture exams, or the lecture counts for 75% of your grade and lab just 25%. So I have to boost up the number of points for objective exams and lecture to get that percentage correctly. What about makeups? Oh yeah, forget it. It's just too hard, right? And you might be able to get a makeup on a lab quiz if your lab instructor is willing to do that. But practicums, no way, because it takes 3 or 4 hours to set up a lab practicum. There's just no way that somebody's going to come in and set up a lab practicum for one student. Okay, so you got to look at everything. And then it's just what, a 90, 80, 70, 60 scale. Read this about academic honesty. No looking around when you're taking a test, right? All the tests are going to be closed book, closed notes, just information that's in your mind. Cell phones, any kind of electronic device has to be turned off, right? If you have it in vibrate or airplane mode or any other kind of mode, if it's in a mode, right, you'll get a zero on that part of the course, right? Okay. If anybody wants to eat and drink in anatomy lab, and eat eyeball juice and brain juice and pig guts and stuff like that, you're welcome to. But I wouldn't recommend it, right? I wouldn't eat anything in lab. Don't take anything in there with you. All right, read all this other information. And here it says, what, that I record the lectures and put them on as a WAV file. All media players, most media players play WAV files. There's some media players that just play video and not audio. That could be a problem, but Windows Media Player, Real Player, what's another kind of player? QuickTime plays WAV files, right? All right, and read this information right here. And then we have the tentative schedule. All right, so we're going to do orientation today, and we'll talk about cells the next two times. And when do we have our first test? That's going to be on September 9th. That just happens to be Wednesday. All right, so next time I'm going to pass out the study guide for Chapter 1. It was just too big for me to carry down today. So the way you do well in this class is that you study a little bit every day, because you're learning a new language, you're learning new ways to put things together, and you got to work with that information. You just can't read it and have that knowledge available to you. You have to work with that information somehow. So study a little bit every day, so that by the time this first exam comes along, it will actually be kind of fun to take an exam, right? You won't just be completely stressed out. So here's the schedule, and then here is the lab schedule. I forget if you guys, I think all of you have one lab a week. So you're in this first grid right here. Some of the lab sections actually meet twice a week, and they might have a different schedule, which I didn't include in here. So that's your syllabus. All right, if you lose it, where can you go get this? In Blackboard, which is, right, this, here's the URL right here. Okay. And your course will be there. And then I'll put grades there. Usually have, after a test that evening, your grades posted, so you can go and check your grades right away. All right, so that's really nice reinforcement. All right, so this is not an online or a hybrid class. It's just web-enhanced. So if you don't have access to a computer, it's not necessary to get course points, but you might want to find out where you can get access to a computer, like, for instance, in the LLRC. Right, to get this information whenever you want. Okay, does anybody have a question? Any questions so far? Yeah. Okay. I think I'm losing my hearing. So you have to speak up really loud. Oh, a Cypress College ID card. Yeah, in order to take a test, when you're done with the test, I need to see an ID, picture ID. I think, does Fullerton College work at the library here? Okay, then Fullerton College works here too.
Okay,
Fullerton or Cypress College. And it seems like a little bit of a hassle, but since I teach a lot of online classes, that's a mandatory requirement for my online classes, but I can't treat some students one way and other students a different way. So now I just treat everybody the same way, so everybody has to show me a picture ID when they turn their test in after the test. Okay. Yeah. I don't. I ran out of syllabuses.
Oh, okay.
But I must have some in my office. Oh, here's a copy right here. Yeah. But don't forget, it's online too. Yeah.
On the test, when we do labeling, how important will spelling be?
Ah, I give you a figure with the labels erased off of them, and then there's going to be different numbers where the labels used to be, and then I'll give you a list of terms, and then you have to match the list of terms to that one list from to that particular number. And if it's like A, then just bubble in A. Okay, so this, and here you're going to be graded using Scantrons. I'll tell you more about Scantrons later, all right, which ones you need and how to behave when you use them so you don't get gypped out of points. Okay, yeah. Oh, okay. In the study guide, I tell you the objectives that you need. I tell you the questions at the end of the chapter by number that you have to become familiar with, and the figure numbers. All right. And when you go from one edition to another, or from one textbook to a whole different textbook, then of course the questions don't match up and the figure numbers don't match up. So that is a huge problem. All right. But since I give you the pictures, if you then just manually go through and make sure that you're studying the right pictures. Sometimes the lead lines change a little bit. So it's kind of important that you at least check your version with what is on the syllabus. And there's a copy in the reserve section of the library. So you can go there and check.
As far as the new one, because the new one comes packaged with like a CD and all that, and I don't know if we'll need it as far as like getting the same book, but it's a used version somewhere else.
Yeah, that's a used, if it's the same edition, that probably will work fine. I know there's an international edition and in big red letters, I think. Oh, I've got to tell you something else. the big red letters that says this is an Asian version, not to be used in North America because content has changed. And I checked about 5 or 10 pages, and the content was exactly the same on those 5 pages. But if it's not on some page that's crucial for you, I didn't go and check every page by page by page by page. And I think that one was $50. You know, it was a paperback book. So you just have to, if you're not going to use what I have up here, you just got to be really careful that you don't mix up the figure numbers and the questions at the end of the chapter exactly the same. Okay? So personally, I don't know, I kind of like that Asian version. I mean, if you can save $150, right? Okay.
Does the study guide indicate which?
Yes. I give you the figure number in the current textbook, and then you also have it right there for you, too. Okay. Okay. So I'm glad you guys are interested in that study guide. That's really important. Okay. So, any other questions before I start talking about stuff? No? Okay, I'll try to bring more syllabuses next time. All right, so on Blackboard, all right, here he is. Yeah.
The last time you checked with the bookstore, did they have all of the optional and the required text available?
Oh, let me see. Let's go look at that list. You know what? Probably not. They probably only have the required material.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
seek it out. Yeah. But talk with your lab instructor to see if they might even use it. Okay? Because they might not use it. And some of these you'll only use for maybe the first couple of weeks, like histology. We'll get through that pretty fast. So I don't even know what the price of these things are at the moment anymore. Say that again?
What did you say we only needed for 2 weeks to mail it?
Oh, the histology references.
Oh,
all right, so these slides look huge. Let's see, there should be something that says view here. View, zoom. Let's do page. That looks a little bit better. Okay, so we're going to start our lecture. Let's see, when are we out of here? We're out of here at 11:50. Maybe I'll just jot that down on the board. That's when we're done. Okay, so here are a couple important disciplines that, of course, clinicians are going to be very interested in. Anybody involved in healthcare, and that's anatomy and physiology. They're related to each other, but they're really separate disciplines. You can't study one without the other, so sometimes it's a little confusing. Right? But anatomy is a scientific study of structure of the human body. And in this class, it's pretty much all we're going to talk about is the human body. We won't talk much about other kinds of animals in here. So, I don't know, give me an example of a structure in your body or on your body. What's a structure? Like your Adam's apple, that's a structure. Okay, somebody's pointing to their neck. Or your arm, that's a structure. Right, or your hand. Right, and so we're going to learn and see how somebody's hand is put together. Guess what you got in there? You got bones in there, and you got muscles in there, and nerves, and things like that. And so we'll look at all of those pieces that make up a hand. Right, and that leads me to the second topic over here, and that is physiology. Physiology is a scientific discipline that studies the functioning of biological systems. Okay, how does your hand function? Right, what does your hand do? Well, it's got all these bones in there, and they can curl around objects. Right, and if you don't have a voice, you can do sign language with your hand, communication. Ah, I was just thinking of another kind of communication, which I won't. I can show you because it's not being recorded, but I think you know what I'm talking about. Okay, so communication is important, grasping is important, and like this mouse that I have right here, it's got all these buttons on it, and I'm grabbing it. What is a special feature, anatomical feature of my hand that allows me to work this mouse and grab it and lift it off the table? Like, can't, Yeah, your opposable thumb, right? Your cats and dogs wouldn't be able to work something like that because they don't they have a thumb, right? But it's not opposable. It doesn't have the proper joint to where a thumb can oppose different fingers. So the structure of a hand means that it can have special kinds of functions, right? So there's always a very special relationship between structure and function. And I'll try to mention important structure-function relationships as we go through the class. All right. And so, for instance, the reason why you can see is that you have eyes, but what's inside your eyes? Special structures that allow you that particular sense, vision as a sense. All right. So make sure you know the difference between anatomy and physiology, but realize that there certainly is a nice correspondence between them. All right. There are different branches of anatomy, different sub-disciplines of anatomy. Gross anatomy. All right. What do you think that means? Gross means disgusting. But that's not the proper use of the term. All right. Gross means also what?
Big.
So things that you can see with your naked eye, that's gross anatomy, like your ear, your nose, a limb, for instance, belly button. That's gross anatomy. Muscles, big muscles that we can see, that's gross anatomy. Microscopic anatomy means what? Can't see it with your naked eye. You need a special instrument, which you'll learn about in this week's lab. You need a microscope in order to see very, very small, minute structures that make up our body, like cells and tissues and things like that. Developmental anatomy is when we study how the structure of a person's body changes, right? From when an oocyte is fertilized by a sperm until you die. Right, so from conception to death, that's what we call developmental anatomy. What part of your body is changing all the time, is growing, and never stops growing? Okay, yeah, your brain is remodeling itself all the time if you use it. We're going to talk about that when we get into the nervous system. But there are some gross structures that keep growing your whole life period, and that is your nose and your ears keep growing. Right, so maybe you can flash and have a picture in your mind of your grandma or grandpa, and they, you know, have bigger ears than they did 20, 30 years ago, bigger nose because they just keep growing. That is what? Developmental anatomy. Embryology, which is something that we don't do a really good job in this class, and that's how a fetus develops in utero before they're born, so that's from conception to birth. Surface anatomy is when we just look at the surface of somebody's body and understand something about underlying deeper structures. All right, so for instance, if I palpate my cheekbone right here, right, I know exactly what bone that is. That's what we call the zygomatic bone. And then I see an outline of a jaw. That's a mandible. And then this elbow that people bang all the time. There's a bone right there called the ulna. All right, so if you can relate underlying deeper structures that are hidden from surface features, that's what we call surface anatomy. And that's pretty good because a lot of times we'd like to know where a deep structure is, but we don't want to just slice somebody open to take a look. We can know where it is by what? Just palpating or observing somebody's external features. Systemic anatomy is a good approach that we use in here. And systemic anatomy just means that we break the body down into its various organ systems and then study anatomy by organ systems. So for instance, the cardiovascular system is an organ system. And could you think of another kind of organ system that makes up your body besides cardiovascular? Okay, so for instance, muscular system, skeletal system, nervous system, digestive system. So after the first couple weeks, we'll just start to study the various anatomical features of your body by organ system. And then cytology is the study of cells. That's chapter 2. And histology is the study of many cells put together that perform a certain kind of function. We call that histology. So histology is the study of tissues. All right, so there are many different kinds of anatomy. And when I started talking about these different levels, you could see that some of these levels were very large, some were very, very small, and some you need microscopes for, some actually you don't, that are still small, but maybe you don't need a microscope for, like to look at a tissue, for instance. So that kind of underscores a strategy that we like to use. As a matter of fact, not just in anatomy, but everywhere. So if you have a big complicated topic, like how a human body is put together and even how it functions, what is a good approach to take to understand something that's very complicated? Something else that might be really complicated is your finances, right? Your family finances. How do you understand your family finances? What's a good way of understanding something that's big and complicated? Break it down into smaller pieces, right? And understand how a small piece works. And then another small piece, and then another small piece, and then you add up the small pieces together, right? And then you have a better idea of how the whole big thing is put together and functions. All right, so we have right here the structural and functional organization of the body, and we start with things that are really small. So each one of these things can be thought of as a building block for something a little bit more complicated. So something that's really small in your body is that chemical. We have to learn something about important chemicals that function in your body. Probably one of the most important in this list right here would be an important energy molecule. And do I have it here? Oh, yeah. For instance, adenosine triphosphate. That's the energy molecule that drives all of your biological functions. So if somebody doesn't have ATP in their body, what can you tell me about that person? They're dead. That's right. Okay. So we're going to talk about that plus all of these other different kinds of chemicals in here. So you'll have to learn something about chemicals and what they do for the body. And if we put a bunch of chemicals together, then we get something called an organelle. Organelle is something very small that fits inside of a cell. So these, we even have a hard time seeing with a microscope because they're so small. So what would you say the building block of an organelle is? You would say they're chemicals, right? So we put a bunch of chemicals together, we get an organelle. Some organelles would be like the nucleus that holds our chromosomes. The nucleus determines the function of a cell, how it functions. And then rough endoplasmic reticulum is something that makes proteins in our body, and the Golgi body, we'll see what that does when we get into the next chapter. All right, so these are all subcellular organelles. And if we put all of these organelles together, guess what we get? We get the next higher level of organization, that is the cell. All right, so what's a building block of a cell? Organelles. Yeah, what's a building block of organelles? You would say chemicals, right? All right. And if we put a bunch of cells together, we can get a tissue. So that some of these are just whole chapters all by themselves. A tissue makes up your body, and if you point to some part of your body, this is what's really nice and simple. There's only four tissues that make up your whole body. And can you tell which ones they are? Yeah, they're right here on the list. Epithelium, connective tissue, muscle tissue, and nervous tissue. So we'll study what they look like and what their function is inside the body. So an epithelium, okay, is an epithelium made up of one cell or a collection of cells? It's a collection of cells, right? So a muscle, like the biceps brachii, that's a collection of muscle cells. All right, so the building block of a tissue is what? A bunch of cells that all kind of look the same, all have the same kind of function. That's what a tissue is. All right, and if we put different kinds of tissues together, like nervous tissue and muscle tissue, we get something called an organ. That's two or more tissues that are working together to perform one function. Like that biceps brachii again, right? It works really nice in me because there's still a nerve that goes to it, that controls that muscle. There's muscle tissue, there's nervous tissue, there's connective tissue in that muscle. So that is really, the biceps brachii is what? It is really an organ because it has, it's made up of various building blocks, just not one kind of cell. And if we put two or more organs together, then we get an organ system. Right, like if we put a bunch of muscles together, like a biceps and a triceps, right? That's an organ system. If we put a stomach together with a pancreas and a small intestine, those are all different organs, but if we put those all together and study it as a functioning group, that is an organ system. That's the digestive system. And then when we put all of the organ systems together, what do we get? We get you, or me, right? The organism made up of all of those different kinds of organ systems. So, you have a pretty good picture. Let's see what we can do here. View? Where's view? Here's view. Okay. All right, so here is a chart that shows the different levels of organization. This probably is an exam figure, so make sure that you know how to move up or down in complexity. All right, so if we put a bunch of organ systems together, we get what? The organism. And what's the building block of an organism? All of the various organ systems. All right, and here's a tissue. If we put a bunch of tissues together, what do we get? We get the organ. All right, so make sure you look at this and be able to follow your way around on this particular slide. Now what you see right here are the various kinds of organ systems that we're going to look at. Like here are a bunch of bones. That is the skeletal system, right? Muscle system. What muscle did I mention in class? So for the first exam, you don't have to know all the components of an organ system, but if I give you an organ, you might want to know what organ system it belongs to. Okay, so let's go this direction first. Let's say digestive system. Can anybody name an organ that participates in the digestive system? Like stomach, for instance. Or if I say small intestine, what organ system does that belong to? You would say digestive system, right? So, and if I give you, for instance, a humerus, a name of a bone in the arm, what organ system does that belong to? That's a skeletal system. All right, but more than likely, I'm not going to choose an organ system that's easy to understand. Like if I say brain, you would say nervous system, right? That's really simple. Or if I say ovary, that would be endocrine system. And if I say heart, that's obviously cardiovascular system. All right, I'm going to pick on a word that you have to be educated to know something about. So if I say skin, what organ system does the skin belong to? Yes, the integumentary system, right? You probably never heard of that unless you've had some kind of education before in anatomy or physiology. Your integument is your skin and accessory structures that are associated with the skin, like nails, for instance, and hair, and some glands that secrete oil onto the skin to make sure it doesn't turn into a potato chip and crack all up. All right, so integumentary system, I would want you to know, because that means that for sure I could tell you were reading the textbook. Respiratory system. What's an organ that's involved with respiratory system? No. Lungs. See, that's too easy for something like that. All right, digestive system we've covered already. Okay. Reproductive system, right? For instance, testes versus ovaries. Yeah, vagina versus penis, right? These are different parts of the reproductive system. And urinary system is pretty small. We just got these kidneys here, urinary bladder, and a couple tubes associated with them. All right, so those are the various kinds of organ systems. All right, different books break up organ systems into different components. All right, I think I've got pretty much the ones that your book talks about right there. Okay, terminology and body plan. Anatomic position. All right, so this is important to understand something about anatomical position, because we want to describe how to get from one place in your body to another place. And when we study anatomy, we have a lot of slides that have organs that are color-coded, that you see maybe the stomach is going to be in. Oh, why did it lose? Wrong one. This is the one I want. All right, like for instance, here's an illustration in color, and maybe if this is a picture of the digestive system, we'll see that the stomach's in red, small intestines in green, large intestines in orange, right? And if you memorize the color of these different structures and come and take a test, you might be really disappointed because what color is the test in? It's just black and white, right? So understand the relationship of different structures to each other by position, not by just color, because color is just artificial, all right? And that's something else a little bit about me. I'm colorblind. So a lot of times I'll show you some nice color diagrams, but I won't know what the color is. And so if I ask you what color is that, just tell me what it is. Don't look at me like really strange or something, okay? And so for education and learning is pretty good, but if you're really going to have a working understanding of something, the way you know anatomy is not by what artificial color, but by the relationship of structures to each other. All right, and so that takes me to anatomic position. And so if we're going to tell somebody how to what's on top of another structure in the body, or what's right of it, or left of it, in front of it, or back of it, we've got to know what the standard body position is. And we call that anatomic position. So when somebody's standing erect with their feet on the ground, facing forward, there are arms down by their sides, and now I'm relaxed, okay, I could ask you, am I in anatomic position right now? But if you look at that slide, am I in the same position that that illustration's in? No, I have to move my thumbs so they point out toward the side. Now I'm in anatomic position. So my thumb is pointing out to the side, and my little finger is what? More toward the inside of my body. So now I can say how to get from my thumb to my little finger, right? Which is, so on my right hand, my thumb is what? To the right of my little finger, if I'm in anatomic position, but not if I'm just in a relaxed position. It doesn't fit that way. So anatomic position is like this, with the palms facing anteriorly toward the front. That is anatomic position. All right, so this illustration also shows some body compartments, like we see the head and the neck right here. That's good terminology to know, right? And the trunk then is made up of the thorax, that's a particular cavity, and the abdominal cavity right here, and pelvic cavity. The floor of the pelvic cavity is what we call the perineum. That's a term sometimes people don't pick up in an anatomy class, right? So the perineum is the muscle floor that holds what? All of your pelvic organs up in the pelvic cavity so they don't fall on the floor. Okay. The axial skeleton, all right, is made up of the head, neck, and trunk. The appendicular skeleton is made of appendages, like your upper appendage is, okay, your arm and your leg. We're going to see that there's better definitions for arm and leg, though, in just a little bit. All right, so that's one way that we can break the body down into two major components, appendicular versus axial skeleton. All right, so that is anatomic position. You have to know some directional terms. Let's see what kind of slide I have for directional terms. Rats. I just can't see the slide well enough. All right, well, let's go to this one right here. Anterior means toward the front of the body. Posterior means toward the back. All right. Now, in anatomy, there are sometimes a lot of words that have the same meaning, right? And that you're familiar with that in your everyday language. Like when I say Bill, what does Bill mean? Bill could be somebody's name. It could be a dollar bill, or it could be like a receipt that you owe money or something. So you have to know by context what that word really means. So as a matter of fact, sometimes there's one structure and it has many names, and in which case you'll have to just be familiar with all those different names. A good example of that is Lincoln Avenue right here. But if you go west, what does it become? It becomes Carson Street, and you just have to know why. Well, that same street has different names depending on where you are, okay? And believe it or not, I have different names that people use at different times, okay? So you just have to know by context. So the same term that means anterior is ventral, and posterior is the same as dorsal, at least in the human. So toward your back is dorsal, toward your front is ventral. Anterior or ventral, it's the same. Superior and inferior. Superior means up toward your head, inferior means down toward your feet. So what is your nose compared to your belly button? Your nose is Superior doesn't mean it's any better or worse. It just means what? It's on top of. That's what superior means. And my ankle is what compared to my belly button? Ankle is inferior. It's below. So those are proper anatomical terms. You don't use above or below. We use superior, inferior all the time. Cranial and caudal, pretty much the same. Cranial means toward your brain. That's your cranium up over here. Caudal literally means toward your tail. All right, so it doesn't make a whole lot of sense in people sometimes, but your tail is what? Like your tailbone. It almost is the same meaning as superior and inferior. Medial and lateral. All these are relative terms, right? That's how to go from one place to another as long as you know where you are. And how do you know where you are? Because of anatomic position, right? All right, so medial means something that's on midline in the body. So if you draw a line right through the tip of your nose, between your front teeth, right down through the middle of your belly button, that's the midline of your body. And lateral means out toward the side. All right, so let's compare two structures again, your little finger and your thumb. What is your little finger compared to your thumb? Is it medial or lateral? It is medial because it's toward midline. The thumb is lateral because it's pointing out to the side, and you know that because you know anatomic position. Right, so medial and lateral makes sense. Proximal and distal, again, two relative terms when we talk about two different structures in the body. Your upper appendage is attached to your axial skeleton via the shoulder joint right here. And so you could think of your shoulder and your elbow as two important joints. The proximal means located to some center location in your body. Maybe midline, or it means proximal. If it's farther away, that's what we call distal. All right, so the shoulder compared to the elbow, what is the shoulder? The shoulder is proximal, it's closer to some center point in your body compared to your elbow, which is farther away. So your elbow is farther away, we call that distal. A lot of times we want to take the pulse of somebody to find out what their heart rate is, right? We can palpate their blood coursing through various arteries in their body. We can take a central pulse that's very close to their heart in the carotid artery, or we can take a distal pulse. What does distal mean? Far away from some center point. So for instance, you feel a pulse right here that's far away from your heart. We call that a distal pulse. And we'll find out what artery that is a little bit later. Superficial and deep. Many organs have complexity. They're different on the inside compared to the outside. And so we see that's true with the kidney, the adrenal gland, the brain, bones, for instance. And so we want to be able to tell what layer we're talking about. Superficial means on the surface of something. It could be the surface of your body or the surface of an organ. That's superficial. Deep means what? More on the inside. So what is the most superficial organ system in your body? Yeah, well, you wouldn't get any credit for that, though. What is it? It is your integument or integumentary system. Okay, so make sure you can use that term in language. Contralateral, ipsilateral. Sometimes in your body, things, if they're on one side of the body, information stays on one side. Other times it crosses over. So a lot of times the left side of your brain is controlling the right side of your body and vice versa. Right? So we call that contralateral, if something switches sides. But if it stays on the same side, we say it's ipsilateral. Okay? Ipsilateral means staying on the same side of the body. All right, then body planes. We got a number of different body planes right here. We got a pretty good illustration of the various planes. So if you're going to describe where something is in this room, how many different bits of information would you have to tell somebody where it is? Like this bottle right here. How would you describe to somebody where is this bottle right here? Okay, you need three axes or three planes to describe where this bottle is exactly. Like how far from the front of the room or the back of the room tells you where the bottle is. In one dimension, but you still wouldn't know where it is because where could it be? It could still be up there on the ceiling, Right? So you have to say what? How far it is off the floor or how far away it is from the ceiling. But still, that doesn't really tell us where the bottle is, because then it could be, what, on a line. You also have to say how far away it is from the side walls. Right? So there's three planes that describe space. Right? And one is the anterior-posterior dimension, one is right and left, and the other is what? Superior and inferior. And those are the planes that we use for imaging. So if we separate the body into right and left parts, that's what we call a sagittal plane. So sagittal plane would separate somebody into right pieces and left pieces. And there's one particular plane that's very specific. If it's a plane right smack in the middle that separates you into equal pieces, because we're mostly bilateral, right and left, we call that mid-sagittal. So you could have a sagittal plane on a shoulder right here that would chop off somebody's left arm from the rest of the body. That's a sagittal plane, but that's not a mid-sagittal plane. Mid-sagittal is what? Separating equal parts, right and left. Transverse plane, we see right here, what is that separating? That's separating the transverse is like this. Transverse is separating a superior part from an inferior part. Can you ever have equal superior and inferior parts? Nope, there's no symmetry whatsoever like that, right? So there's no mid-transverse plane, it's just transverse plane. All right, so you got sagittal, you got transverse, what's the last one? Last one is what we call coronal. So coronal plane could chop off just the tip of your nose, right, from the rest of your body. So a coronal plane, sometimes we call it a frontal plane, separates an anterior part of your body from a posterior part. That's a coronal plane. So here we have three different radiographs. This one right here is coronal. This one, what would this one be? That is like this. Right through the level maybe of the heart or stomach right here. This is transverse. And then this one, the last one right here, is a sagittal plane, and I see some vertebral column right there, and that might be a mid-sagittal plane. That might be exactly right on midline. Ah, that could be axial. This is true. Okay, so coronal sometimes is called frontal. Transverse sometimes is called axial. Right, sagittal, mid-sagittal. I haven't really heard different terms for that one. And a lot of this sometimes has developed from when somebody, a company develops an instrument. Like there are different companies, General Electric makes imaging equipment, Philips Medical Systems makes imaging equipment, various kinds of companies make it. And sometimes they'll patent terminology. So if a company owns a patent, then another company, if they're going to show an image exactly the same way, they got to do what? They got to call it something else because they don't want to pay royalties to it. Okay, so that's why some of this different terminology develops as a result. Okay, and if we ever take a plane that moves on a diagonal through something, we call that oblique. And sometimes that's real important because not all of the organs in our body are lined exactly, all right, along these three planes. Sometimes an organ is angulated. Does anybody know any organs that are angulated in your body? There's one organ that's more on, you have one of, and it's more on the left side of your body than the right. That's the hint. That's your heart. And as you go from superior to inferior, your heart is angulated like that. So if you want to get really good pictures of the heart, guess how you have to image it? You have to image it angulated. So we call that an oblique section because it doesn't align itself along strictly the sagittal, transverse, or coronal planes. Okay. Body regions. Oh, that's pretty nice and easy to appreciate. What's your head? Point your head. Okay, that's good. Neck, we talked about trunk. We've got the thorax from your shoulders down to your diaphragm. And then your abdomen from your diaphragm down to about where your hip bones are. That's your abdomen. And then below your hip bones, you have the pelvis that contains parts of your digestive system and reproductive system. Now the limbs. These are the appendages. Now this is where the terminology gets a little bit tricky. So for instance, if I point right here, what does that look like to you? That looks like a leg. right? But it's not. You're going to say, well, looks like your leg. But in proper anatomic terminology, this really is your thigh. Between your hip and your knee is your thigh, and from your knee to your ankle is your leg, right? So don't get a leg and thigh mixed up, because you'll completely disassemble somebody the wrong way and put them back together the wrong way. All right, and so like right here, that kind of looks like an arm, but it's not an arm. Between your elbow and your wrist, this is your forearm, and between your elbow and your shoulder, that's your arm. All right, so again, don't put anybody back together the wrong way. All right, body cavities. Our body holds a lot of different structures. A lot of different organs. And so there has to be cavities to hold all of these different organs. So in your thorax, between your shoulders and your diaphragm, guess what you have in your thorax? Anything important in there? You got your lungs in there, you got your heart in there. So there's got to be cavities that hold these very important structures. All right, so if we think of the whole human body, we can break it down into two main cavities. There is the dorsal cavity. What's another name for dorsal? Is it on the slide? It's not on the slide. That's good. Dorsal is the same thing as posterior. And then we have a cavity that's ventral. That is the anterior, right? So ventral and anterior. So in this like yellow or gold or green color, this is your dorsal cavity. And this cavity now is broken down into two subcavities. The superior one contains the brain, so we call that the cranial cavity. And then this one down over here, the inferior one, holds the spinal cord. We call that the vertebral cavity. So there can be main cavities and subcavities that make up the main cavities. All right. So the dorsal cavity is not so hard to appreciate, but this anterior one or ventral one is a little bit more complicated. The thoracic cavity between the diaphragm and your shoulders that holds your lungs and heart and things like that. Below the diaphragm is the abdominal cavity, and then there's a line of demarcation roughly following your hip bones. Below that or inferior to that is the pelvic cavity. And now here is some important terminology. In anatomy, we can take two structures, and if we want to talk about them as a unit, because maybe they're functioning as a unit or there's damage to that particular unit, we can take the names of these two structures and just jam them together as long as we put an O between them. So here we see the abdominal cavity and the pelvic cavity, but maybe we're interested about talking about maybe there's infection in this whole area right here, and we want to say the abdominopelvic cavity because these things are connected together. All right, so did you hear there was a difference between abdominal and abdomino? Right, abdominal means what? I'm going to put another word after it, like abdominopelvic. So now I'm going to talk about this whole thing as being one cavity right here. So abdominopelvic cavity, sometimes we also call the peritoneal cavity. All right, peritoneal cavity and abdominopelvic are exactly the same thing. And their subunits are what? The abdominal cavity and the pelvic cavity. All right. Furthermore, if we look at an anterior view, we can see what? The abdominopelvic cavity or the peritoneal cavity made up of the peritoneal. It might be on that slide. If I could see the slide well enough. Peritoneal cavity. Ah, right there. Yeah, thank you. Peritoneal cavity. Okay. But now let's look. Let's change our attention to the thoracic cavity. The thoracic cavity has got some other cavities inside of it. There's cavities that hold the lungs. Right? The right and left lung cavities, but we don't call it lung. We call it pleural cavities. The pleural cavities hold just the lungs in particular. And the right and left pleural cavities are separated by this center cavity right here, which is what we call the mediastinum. So that's another word that you haven't heard before, probably, the mediastinum. So if you're going to ask for an imaging study of somebody's mediastinum, what are you particularly interested in? The heart and some of the great vessels coming off the heart. Maybe it's a newborn baby and some of the blood vessels got rerouted the wrong way and you want to find out how things are connected up. You need a nice mediastinal radiograph to find out what's going on in there. Right? So mediastinum is used all the time. So make sure you know mediastinum. The mediastinum is broken down into the superior part that has blood vessels and thymus gland, and then this inferior part right here that holds the heart. And there's a special cavity that holds the heart. We call that the pericardial cavity or pericardium. All right, so it's got all those different cavities. So this is a really good exam figure, and most of these that I've showed you are good exam figures. So make sure that you can label all of these. And this will help you develop vocabulary, too, and understanding of the words. All right, so as a matter of fact, I see the cranial cavity with the vertebral. If we put cranial and vertebral cavity together, what do we get? What cavity is that? That's the dorsal cavity, right? And this kind of looks like red to me. If we put all these red cavities together, that's the ventral cavity, right? That's the ventral cavity. Okay, so what else do we have to talk to? Serous membranes. Oh, that's the last topic for today. All right, serous membrane. Let me just tell you what a serous membrane is. And then next time we'll start here, so remind me where to start on Wednesday. But there are two main kinds of membranes in our body. And the two main kinds are serous membranes and mucus membranes. A mucus membrane is a membrane that lines a cavity that's open to the outside world. So what kind of cavity that you have in your body that you know is open to the outside world? Give me one. Mouth, oral cavity. That's open to the outside world. What kind of membrane does it have? Mucous membrane. Nasal cavity. Digestive tract. It's open to the outside world. It has a mucous membrane around it. All right. A serous membrane, all right, lines a cavity that's not open to the outside world. Not open to outside. So what kind of cavities are not open to the outside world? And you know what? I wouldn't expect you to know, but we just got done talking about a number of them. Like, for instance, the cranial cavity. Do you think that would be a good idea to have that open to the outside world? No, you should not. All right? That's surrounded by a serous membrane. All right, what about your heart? Is that open to the outside world? No. That's a serous membrane that we call the pericardium. Your lungs, all right? On the outside, not open to the outside world, the pleural membrane is a serous membrane. Right? And serous membranes have a number of different parts to them. So if you want to look that up before next time, we're going to start talking about the different parts, the three parts of a serous membrane. And you can see some serous membranes right here. The pericardial membrane, the pleural membrane, and peritoneum. All right, we talked about the peritoneum. Where is the peritoneal cavity? It is the abdominal pelvic cavity. So there is a membrane that surrounds the abdominal pelvic cavity, right, or peritoneum, and so there's a peritoneal membrane there. Do you think you would ever like to have an infection of a serous membrane? No. Yeah, you sure wouldn't. Like that would be an infection around the heart. We call that pericarditis, all right? And if you have an infection of the peritoneum, we would call that a peritonitis. All right, so I got to stop because I got to go to lab. So where's the sign-in sheet at?
It didn't come down here.
Got it right here? Okay, good.
It didn't come down here.
Oh, the yellow sheet, yeah, is right here. No, I sure don't. Okay. I'll bring some more, but I showed people how to get them. So what was it that you wanted?